Hello, everyone, and welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. I'm your teacher, Ruth, and we are talking about time management. We're on the third day of our lesson, and we've given you a lot of food for thought over the last couple of days. Time management problems, possible solutions, getting you to think about how your time management skills are and what you can do to improve them. I'm in the studio with some other very organized and management-wise teachers, I hope, and we're going to talk some more about helping you to manage your time better. Amanda, if you had to pick out something that we've discussed from the last couple of days to remind our listeners of, what would you talk about?
I think I would talk about what you mentioned at the beginning there about being reactive rather than proactive. When we're reactive, we're just reacting to the situation or events that are happening around us. The opposite of that is being proactive, where you're actually trying to change something or prevent something from happening. And I really like that because I also need to be careful I don't react to the situation. But rather, in time management, being proactive really does bring down the stress, really does help you manage your time a lot better. And yeah, so I really like the term reactive and proactive.
And Simon, what kinds of things prevent you from using your time wisely? What derails your time management plan?
Well, we talked a little bit about the quadrants yesterday, four quadrants, the idea that things can be urgent but not important, as well as urgent and important, but things can also be not urgent and not important, or not urgent but important. And so we sort of learned how to categorize different things we're working on at any given time. And I think we talked about how we tend to spend time in the fourth quadrant, which was not urgent and not important. But I think I tend to get derailed more by that first quadrant, things that are not urgent, are urgent and important. And so if you're spending a lot of time doing that, you really are reacting, which is what Amanda was talking about. And then you don't have time to plan and be proactive, which is what you would be doing if you were working on things that are very important, but maybe not as rushed, not as urgent.
Exactly. And at the end of our program yesterday, we were beginning to talk about some tips about letting importance guide your workflow and not urgency. And Campbell, what was our first tip from yesterday?
Well, our first tip from yesterday was act on the important, don't react to the urgent. And the idea is to focus on the things that are important. And we talked about quadrant two, and that is the home of the activities that would bring you the most productivity.
That's right. So if you haven't yet, listeners, please open your magazines to page 22 today. We're going to be talking about some more choices that we can make that help us to let importance guide our choices. Let's begin reading at the top of page 22.
Choice 2. Go for extraordinary. Don't settle for ordinary. Once you make time for what matters, you work on what success looks like in your current most important roles, such as supervisor, coworker, father, or daughter. By thinking about what you want success to look like in each role, you're in a better position to reach extraordinary success. Choice 3. Schedule the big rocks. Don't sort gravel. In the Franklin Covey world, the big rocks represent the major tasks you want to complete in a given time. Instead of filling your time with useless tasks, equivalent to filling a jar with gravel, you first schedule the most important activities and let the rest fall in between the bigger pieces. You regain control of your work and life through careful planning.
All right, so choice two is go for the extraordinary, don't settle for the ordinary. How do we settle for something, Amanda?
Well, settle for something means that you've decided that something is as good as it's going to get. It's not going to get any better than that. And so that's how we can settle for perhaps In this case, the ordinary would mean your everyday life, perhaps your routine, that you just mm-hmm. settle for that, rather than going beyond that or having goals to go beyond that.
I think sometimes of students in this situation, you can settle for getting 70%. That's good enough, but you know that you could get 95%. Mm-hmm. So you want that higher, extraordinary goal or choice instead of settling for just ordinary. So we don't want to just take, it's good enough. We want to go beyond that and be extraordinary. So you need to take time for what matters and work on what success looks like. What does that mean, Simon? What success looks like?
I think it means you need to decide what what the characteristics of success are like in the different parts of your life. And so if you're a parent, you decide what is it that makes a parent a successful parent. It might be something about the way your children behave or sort of their performance in school, or it could be any number of things, but you have to decide what success would look like in that job you do. Hmm. And so that's, I think, basically what they're talking about.
And this, you'll often see this kind of phrasing, what success looks like, what a good job looks like. It just means you decide the characteristics of that certain thing in your own life. Mm-hmm. So in your job, what does success mean to you, or what will success be in that particular situation?
Right. You get to write the definition of success in the various areas of your life.
All right, so we list several different roles here: supervisor, coworker, father, or daughter. So you need to decide, supervisor, what is a successful supervisor? How can I be a successful supervisor?
That's right. So how do you manage a team? How do you help your team to succeed, right? Next thing that they mention is a coworker. How can I be a good coworker? How can I help my company to improve?
That's right. And the important thing is to take the time to think about what success in that particular role looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes I think we don't think about it, so that's why we don't achieve it, is we don't exactly know which direction we're going or how we're going to get there.
Right. You do need to think about what the goals are to get to that particular success. You need to break it down. You can't just think of the definition and then just leave it there. You have to think about how are you going to do it.
Yes. And when I'm thinking about this idea, the word excellence comes to mind. You don't just want to do an okay job. You want to do an excellent job, which in essence means extraordinary. So the second choice we have is to go for the extraordinary and not settle for the ordinary. What about choice three, Campbell?
Well, choice three is schedule the big rocks, don't sort gravel. And I actually like this concept. This is not the first time I've heard of it, but it's the idea is we all have the same amount of time. You know, it kind of bugs me when people say, oh, I don't have time for that, because we all have the same amount of time. It's just how you manage your time. It's how you schedule your time.
Exactly. And in this case, we've got a very clear picture of what they're talking about. What are the big rocks, Simon?
Well, I guess basically it's important to realize there's a connection between choice two and choice three here. So in choice two, you're deciding really what is important, what it would look like if you were successful. And so once you know what success looks like in that task, you're able to decide what the big rocks are, what the important big jobs are that will bring you closer to that success you defined in choice two. And so I think that's really what's going on here. The big rocks are basically the major tasks you want to complete in the given time. And so they're the things that are going to move you closest to your goal of success.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point, Simon, because the idea is that it is what your definition of success defines what, you know, what is important, right?
Mm-hmm.
What the big rocks are. For example, if you're talking about dating, you know, if your goal is because you want to be a mom, you want to, you know, have a family, then dating becomes very important. But if that is not your goal, you don't feel like you want to have a family, you don't want to get married, then dating's not going to be as important to you.
Exactly. So where the big rocks are the major tasks, the important things you want to do, and the gravel is the useless tasks, those things that are not urgent and not important, but somehow we find ourselves doing a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to fill your jar with gravel. In other words, you don't want to use all your time doing things that aren't really important to you. You first schedule the most important activities. And Amanda, do you do that?
Yes, I do. I tend to look at my overall schedule. I don't know, for me, just seeing the picture in a month seems to work very well. See the overall schedule, and then gradually, depending on what my goals are, will depend on how I break that down mm-hmm. daily.
So if you schedule those things first, the most important things that need to be done, and get those done first, then the other things will kind of fall in between the cracks.
That's right. And they give this picture here of filling a jar with stones, I suppose. And I guess the idea is if you put the big stones in first and then you pour in the small stones, they'll all fit. But if mm-hmm. you pour in the small stones first and then you try to jam the big stone in, maybe you don't have time for everything.
That's right. So schedule the most important things first. And it's surprising how difficult that can be.
Right. You know, it takes a lot of discipline. It takes being proactive, you know. But the amazing thing for me is that it's really true. It works if you actually do that, you know. Somehow we always find time for the not urgent, not important things, if we're honest with ourselves. We mm-hmm. always find time for Facebook. We always find time for movies. We always find time for TV, you know. But, mm-hmm. you know, if that is what the thing we fill up our time with first, then there's no time for the other stuff. Mm-hmm. But if we get the other stuff done, there's always time. Somehow, we always find time to do that.
Exactly. And I like what the last sentence says, is you regain control of your work. In order to regain something, that means you've lost it. And you're getting it back. And perhaps for a lot of us, we have lost control of it because the gravel does seem to take up most of our time.
Mm-hmm.
So be proactive. Schedule the big rocks and then just let the gravel fall where it may. All right, we have two more choices to go through. Let's read those now, beginning in line 20.
Choice 4. Rule your technology. Don't let it rule you. Technology must become your servant and not your master. You must master how to interact with your technology so that it's important and useful to your life. That includes learning how to see order in the chaos and sort incoming information into four buckets: appointments, tasks, contacts, and notes documents. Email is also managed with order. Blocking out time to check your email throughout the day, every couple of hours instead of every couple of minutes. By limiting email interruptions, you preserve the flow of your work and eliminate wasted time trying to refocus. Choice 5. Fuel your fire. Don't burn out. A high-pressure work environment leaves employees drained. By choosing to recharge your mental and physical energy, you're feeding your thinking brain. You renew your brain with physical activity, adequate sleep, healthy food options, relaxation, and healthy relationships. Kogan says, extraordinary productivity equates to being conscious in the moment and taking steps each day to cultivate this habit. You feel accomplished at the end of every day, she says.
I think we've already touched on choice 4. Rule your technology, don't let it rule you. We've talked a lot about the fact that technology can be a distraction. It can draw us away from things that are important. And I really like that first sentence here. Technology must be your servant, not your master.
That's right. So it needs to be something that you control, not something that controls you.
And how do you do that? What does that look like?
Well, I think definitely turning off your phone from time to time, you know, putting it on silent and not, you know, responding to every beep and ding that you hear.
Right. And it's amazing how difficult that is to turn off your phone. I know for some people, they like to feel connected all the time, and if they turn off their phone, they feel like they're missing something.
Yeah, for sure. It's like when I can't find my phone, I feel like a part of me is missing. It's kind of weird. It's just, you know, a few years back, this wasn't even a part of my life, you know, mm-hmm. but now it feels like if I don't have it, then I'm kind of lost.
Mm-hmm. So does that mean that it has taken perhaps a more important place in your life than it should?
Yes. So I definitely need to be conscious about being the master and not the servant.
And I think that's interesting because it's about priorities, right? Mm-hmm. What are your priorities? For example, I notice when I go into a movie, I'm very happy to turn my phone off. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to disturb me while I'm watching the movie. But yet, in other parts of my life, I'm okay for it to disrupt or distract mm-hmm. or interrupt mm-hmm. my life. Then I start to think, okay, what are my priorities?
Right. It yeah. bugs me so much when I'm having lunch with a friend and they're constantly like peeking at their phone. Do you know, like the little screen comes up and the light turns on and they're always like looking down. I'm like, I'm talking to you. Stop looking at your phone.
And that also makes you feel like you are not a priority
exactly.
and you're not important.
Exactly.
So I think that's a very good point. Be the master of the technology and not the servant. So if you're doing something important, turn off your phone. And if something is so urgent that it absolutely has to be done, well, someone will come and find you mm-hmm. and tell you about it. So you must master how you interact with your technology so that it's important and useful to your life. It's not controlling your life. And that includes learning how to see order in chaos. Do you ever have chaos in your life, Simon?
Yeah, we all have chaos from time to time. But this, I think, gets back to that idea of the quadrants again, because you need to be able to look at the different things that are demanding your time and decide how important they are and how mm-hmm. urgent they are. And so I think this is really the key of this thing. We need to be able to see order in chaos. We need to be able to understand how important each of these things actually is.
Right. And we are bombarded with so many things all the time. And here they give an example of how you can sort that information into four buckets, which are?
Well, number one is appointments. Number two is tasks. Number three, contacts. And number four, notes and documents.
So you can divide information into those things. Appointments can be urgent, depending on how close they are time-wise to what you're doing. But if you can categorize things, sometimes it helps you to be able to decide the importance or not. Now, how is email a distraction, Campbell?
Well, email can be something that causes you to want to check every 5 minutes or every few minutes, and you don't actually end up getting any work done. You know, so the suggestion here is to block out time in your day to check out your email. And I know this has helped me in my work productivity, you know, so I kind of turn off Outlook. I turn off the email so it's not popping up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this one's a little tricky, actually, because they're talking about like these four buckets for incoming information. But I think probably there should be a fifth bucket for responding to email.
Okay.
Right? Because email brings you information about appointments and tasks and contacts and things like that. So it's kind of the carrier for the information a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, this idea of responding to each of those emails is a very time-consuming thing. You get the information without actually responding. But it also becomes important to acknowledge the email and respond to mm-hmm. it at some point. And I think that is a very time-consuming thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. But I think this idea of blocking out the time to say, okay, from 9 to 9:30, I'm going to answer email, and then I'm going to shut off Outlook or whatever email program you're using so you can concentrate on something else. But I think also we get caught up in the feeling like, if I don't check it all the time, I'm going to miss something mm-hmm. important.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we need to evaluate, okay, how often does that really happen?
Right. I agree with that. I think it's just filtering your emails, like using the quadrants to filter your emails, what is important, what is urgent. I know for myself, I still do let it pop up, but when I see it, in my mind, I'm already filtering. Is this something that's even connected to what I'm doing right now? Or can it wait until 10 minutes later, 20 minutes mm-hmm. later, an hour later, until I've finished my current task?
So you are pausing, clarifying, and deciding.
Correct.
And that is what we talked about being an important concept to be able to do. And I think also we've talked about this earlier is that sometimes we're bound by other people's expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And someone will send you an email, and if you don't respond right away, if you've categorized that as important but not urgent, sometimes then the person will send another email, say, did you get my email? Did you get my email?
Mm-hmm.
And that's forcing that issue into another area.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it helps to just respond by saying, yes, I got your email, I'll get back to you. Mm-hmm. Something like that. So then you can set it aside.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a way, as it says here, to preserve the flow of your work and to eliminate the time trying to refocus. So when something pulls you away from a task, it does take a few minutes to kind of get your mind back into what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So listeners, I hope you can think about doing that. Either turn off your phone for a period of time or block the time to answer the lines or the emails. And then if it's not that particular time in your schedule, let it go until it is. All right. And choice 5, what is that one, Simon?
Well, it says fuel your fire, don't burn out. And the idea there is you should be keeping your fire going, not just using all of the fuel you have and then not being able to do any more.
So you do need to figure out ways to refuel your life, because a high-pressure work environment does leave employees drained. Sometime at the end of the day, when I've had a lot of deadlines and a lot of things to do, I do feel very drained and tired at
mm-hmm.
the end. So you need to choose to recharge your mental and physical energy. And what are some ways you can do that, Campbell?
Well, I mean, I really... As a Christian, I'm often told, you know, I take a Sabbath every week, you know, one day off where you just turn things off and you just focus. And at first I didn't really understand it, but I really think that that is a very healthy way to live. You know, you need to just shut down at least once a week just to kind of just recharge.
That's right. And you need to make the choice to do that. Choosing to do that then allows you to renew yourself and not feel tired and drained all the time. So how can you renew your brain? What are some things that they suggest you can do, Amanda?
Well, you can do some physical activity. That would include exercising or some hobby where you're moving your body. I think even as a parent, it may be like playing with your kids, because that can be quite physical as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you're playing with your kids, you're laughing a lot, too. So that can also be very good for your health. Getting adequate sleep, so enough sleep, that would be typically scientists say between 7 to 8 hours
mm-hmm.
a night. Eating healthy food options. So getting your fruits and your vegetables, getting good meats in there, protein, all those kinds of things. And then relaxation and healthy relationships.
Exactly. So all of these different things then can help us to recharge our batteries or to feel better both mentally and physically. And by healthy relationships, they mean ones that are good for you.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they build you up and they don't tear you down or drain you. I think we all know people who, as soon as we sit down and talk to them, the first thing they do is tell us all their problems and all the things that are wrong. And that doesn't build you up or recharge you. That drains you even more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to be around people that may be encouraging you or helping you to grow.
Exactly. So Kogan says, extraordinary productivity equates to being conscious in the moment and taking steps to cultivate the habit. So it's not something that happens naturally. It's something you have to work at.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about the ways that you can cultivate or make this habit
mm-hmm.
grow. And then how do you feel at the end of the day?
Well, you feel accomplished at the end of every day. And everyone enjoys feeling accomplished. Like, hey, I did something today.
Right. We all like to feel like we've gotten something important finished. We have accomplished something that is worthwhile,
mm-hmm.
not just wasted time and get to the end of the day and think, oh, what did I actually do today?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a draining feeling, too. All right. So as a review or a summary, let's go through those 5 choices one more time. Choice number 1 was?
Act on the important. Don't react to the urgent.
So do what is important. Don't just do what has to be done right away. Choice 2.
Was go for extraordinary. Don't settle for ordinary. And this one was about deciding what success looks like in the different parts of your life. so that you can really set goals for what you want to be doing.
If you don't know where you're going, how are you going to get there?
Mm-hmm.
And choice three, Campbell?
Choice three is to schedule the big rocks, don't sort gravel. So making sure you get the important tasks done first, and then you can fill in the less important things.
So it's perhaps even at the beginning of the day, looking at all the things that really that you need to do or you would like to do, and prioritizing them, deciding which are the big rocks, the important things that need to be done first, then put those on your schedule first. And it's amazing how difficult that can be sometimes. Choice four, Amanda.
Rule your technology, don't let it rule you. So make sure that your technology is helping you. It's important and useful to your life, but it's not controlling your life.
Exactly. And choice five, Simon?
Was fuel your fire. Don't burn out. And this was really just about taking time to relax and recharge by doing a number of different things, getting enough physical activity, sleeping enough, eating healthy food, relaxing, and having healthy relationships.
Right, and I would say that those things are probably quadrant two activities. They're important, but not necessarily urgent, so sometimes they kind of get left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this article. I hope it's given you some food for thought. Perhaps you've already started to do some of these things and prioritize your day and decide what is important rather than what is urgent. Thank you for joining us. We're glad that you've been with us in Advanced Studio Classroom. We hope you'll make time to join us again tomorrow. Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye.